eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
I'm Kim Grinnell of Dogman.com with Chris Vetter, Scott Eklund, and it has been a while since we've done a podcast and lots of technical difficulties this morning, but I think we've got it halfway figured out with a little bit of spit, a little bit of baling wire, and looking over at the liquor cabinet, almost went over there after this fiasco, but it is a little bit starting to get busy. We can feel it in the air. Football's about to start, but a lot of updates on football, basketball, and recruiting. And let's go ahead and start off, guys. Three deletions from the roster. I don't think any of them were really surprising. Maybe Jordan Lolohea a little bit surprising. But, Chris, we've been doing this a long time, and has there been a time where Washington has taken a guy who's gone on a mission and come back and making an impact? I'm trying to think of one.
Yeah, it would be difficult to go back and look. I mean, I remember offensive linemen have come back 100 pounds lighter than they were. I give full respect for wanting to go serve their mission, and that's obviously a huge part of their faith and what they believe in. But it just seems that all the empirical evidence suggests that football and serving missions just really don't necessarily work in the end result. If in fact the plan is to try to be like an NFL player, for instance, if you want to be that guy, if you just want to, earn your degree, play football, have it paid for, that kind of thing, well, then it's probably a little different argument. But yeah, generally speaking, it's been very difficult for guys to go and serve mission. Now, if they serve mission and then do it like the way Jordan Lolohea did it, you would have thought that had given him the best opportunity to be successful. But even in that particular example, it doesn't necessarily seem like it's worked out for him.
And Scott, Jordan Lolohea, he flashed a few times, but he really didn't do anything to jump out at us during the season. A few plays here and there, but then again in spring ball, didn't see much out of him.
Well, yeah, I think he just didn't feel like he fit into where the rotation was with what Eric Schmidt was looking for. And he wasn't a dynamic guy off the edge getting pressure. I think he probably would have been better suited bulking up and moving inside and maybe playing as a three tech. But, he just didn't seem to fit into what Washington was going to do at the edge. And he was a guy that we had a story written for because we had heard he was going to transfer, but he didn't. We'll just kind of see, he didn't transfer, like go into the transfer portal, but he has decided to leave the program and we'll see if he ends up at Utah, BYU, Utah State, a school that's closer to home and maybe caters a little bit more to LDS guys. Not saying that UW doesn't, but, it just seems like those schools end up with a lot more LDS guys, partly just because of where they're at.
Draco Bynum was a guy that, when I initially saw him in person, I thought that he could turn into something, but he just never seemed to really develop. I don't know if there was other interests that were more important to him, like school, but he seemed like he enjoyed being part of the team, but he never really did much. He's one of those guys that didn't develop. I don't think it was injury-wise either. Tell us a little bit about Draco Bynum, Chris.
Well, yeah, I think a lot of people forget that he was actually a U.S. Army All-American. At the time, he was considered a pretty big coup. But also at the time, I think people understood that physically, in terms of his development, he was a bit of a tweener. You know, he wasn't quite big enough to be a full-on defensive lineman, but was he going to be an outside linebacker? Could they play him on the edge? You know, there was, you know, there was even thought during his time at Washington that maybe he would even move to tight end because he's a pretty athletic guy. Ultimately, it just never really worked out. And like you said, Kim, I think the biggest thing that really hampered Draco Bynum was that he just never seemed to take that next step, whether it was in his physical development, whether it was his play on the field in terms of ramping up, you know, what he needed to do. And maybe part of that was the fact that he never really ended up getting settled at one particular position and really made one particular position his own. I think that was probably ultimately his biggest downfall.
And the other guy that was not listed on the roster, omission on there, is one that didn't surprise us at all, and that's Emeka Egwu. And what was it, about 4 or 5 months ago, he put a picture out on Instagram that made us all just go, what the hell? Because he looked like a Greek god, but looks like the injury bug caught up with him, Scott.
Yeah, I mean, he was injured in high school. That's why he didn't participate his senior year. They held him out for the first month, and he just said, I'm going to transfer to UW and reclassify and end up at UW where I can do some work with the training staff and get the medical treatment that I need and just get started on things. And, you know, I think if the old staff had remained, he might have stayed. But I think with this new staff, he just didn't feel like he was a part of it. And from what we've heard, he's been told that he's just not going to be able to – he's just not going to be able to recover to the point where he's going to be successful in football. And so we had a story written that he was going to medically retire. That didn't happen. I've reached out to him. He told me that he still has plans to play football somewhere, but does, you know, hasn't decided on a place. So at this point, you know, he's just kind of sitting out there and we'll see what happens. But it's too bad because I think he's a talented kid and he actually could have fit in to the program here because he was a really good receiver in high school at the first school that he was at. And then he made a transfer at Timber Creek. But, you know, he's a guy that I think the coaches were intrigued by. But when he can't even get on the field, can't even do workouts, I just think they said to him, yeah, you're probably going to get passed over. You might want to look somewhere else.
Real interesting, Chris. You know, I think at this time last year, we were pretty enamored with the running back room, thinking how deep it was. But boy, it just seems like the running backs that they had on the roster don't really fit on what the staff is looking for. And, you know, we talk about this all the time, and I know it makes people a little bit crazy, but sometimes talent isn't enough. Fit is huge. And it's not only the running back room, but a lot of other positions too, where they're looking for a specific type of guy. And fit seems to be an issue right now, not only at running back.
Well, running back is certainly, you know, it's kind of the eye of the beholder, I think, because, you know, Keith Bonifa has done a nice job in the past of kind of fitting the running backs to the system that was in place, first with Chris Peterson's offense, and then trying to find the bigger downhill guys and the power guys to fit with what John Donovan wanted to do. And that's why Emeka Egwu was a really highly coveted guy. That's why Caleb Berry was a really highly coveted guy. I think Sam Adams also fit that mold a little bit because he's a little bigger guy, a guy that could probably run a little bit more downhill. The irony of this whole thing, Kim, was that when everyone looked at the kind of the embarrassment of riches at running back a couple of years ago, everyone thought that maybe Sam Adams might be the odd man out. He might end up moving to defense because a lot of people, I think myself even included, thought maybe safety was his future because he's such a good defensive player, and he showed it when he was at Eastside Catholic that he had that potential. But now it looks kind of, you know, the thing has wholly changed because you lose Caleb Berry, you lose Emeka Egwu, but now you've brought in guys like Wayne Talapapa from Virginia transfer. You've got Aaron Dumas, who played all spring at Washington from New Mexico. And then you've brought in kind of a hybrid guy who I think we're assuming is kind of a fly slot, you know, whatever, in Will Nixon, who they've said is kind of a hybrid receiver running back type guy from Nebraska. So the roster's really been remade quite a bit, and maybe there's been no more upheaval than at the running back position, where obviously what they were looking for last year in terms of fit just doesn't fit at all with what Caleb DeBoer and what Ryan Grubb want to do.
Chris, are you a little bit confused on what they want out of a running back I am.
No, I mean, if you look at what they were doing at Fresno and you look at a guy like Ronnie Rivers, I think you're starting to see a move back more towards what they had in Miles Gaskin, what they had in Savon Ahmed, you know, and what have you. And a guy like Cam Davis, I think, fits a mold of what a guy that they might look at. Now, Richard Newton, probably a little bit more of a power guy initially. You know, we'll see where he fits in. But I think the guys that they're looking for, I mean, Wayne Talapapa, for instance, he's more of a power guy, a third down guy. He's more, to me, like I said, I've always thought that he fit more of what like Habib Elikio was at Oregon, for instance. You know, but he's also going to bring that veteran presence, because all of a sudden, you know, you have Newton there and you have Cam Davis there who has a little bit of experience, but overall it's a pretty thin group and it's a pretty inexperienced group at this point. And so I think that's why they wanted to bring in a guy like Talapapa, because if Dumas ends up being your number one guy, which at least coming out of spring, it certainly feels like it, because we didn't see anything of Newton or Davis, that they need a little bit more veteran presence to kind of round out that particular group.
Hey, Scott, we'll get into recruiting here in a little bit, but when you take a look at this running back group and you see that Washington, you know, really liked Tybo Rogers, but they didn't seem to go after, you know, Jaden Lemar very hard. Is that something where you maybe see that they just like that body style and the type of runner that Rogers is, as opposed to a Lemar?
Yeah. I don't think there's any question about that. Jaden Lemar is a good high school tailback, and obviously a guy that some of the top schools in the country wanted to go after and liked. But, you know, I just don't know if Washington liked that much. You know, they recruited him. I think a big reason they recruited him was because he was a local guy. But he doesn't really fit the mold of what they're for. Now, he can catch the ball out of the backfield. He's a pretty good runner in between the tackles. I just don't know if he's got that. I think they like to get that guy who's a little bit smaller, who's a little bit more of a jitterbug, with the ball in his hands out in open space. And that just isn't Jaden Lemar if you watch him play.
And again, we'll get into recruiting there in a little bit, but do you see them taking another running back?
Yes, I expect them to take one more running back. Now, one of their top guys that they offered, a guy by the name of Brandon Johnson, he just committed to Arizona on an official visit, but I think Washington still has a chance to continue to recruit him and maybe get an official visit out of him during the fall. They weren't pushing on him to get an official visit out of him, and I think they want to kind of see how the running back room plays out this fall. I decide just to stick with one if Will Nixon can be a guy, because Will Nixon, I think, still has 3 years left, 2 years after this year. You got Tybo Rogers coming in. You got Richard Newton with another year or two of eligibility. You've got a lot of guys in that room with still a year of eligibility. Caleb Berry just left, but you also have JV on Sunday with another year or a couple more years of eligibility. So I think a lot of it's really going to come down to you know, how they feel about the room and how they're going to press on guys if they want to get that second tailback in the class. I think they will end up taking a second one if they like what they can get, but they might be just fine sticking with one if they like what they have in the room. So I hate to be wishy-washy on that, but really it's a to be determined at this point.
And Chris, when they line up for the first game, are you anticipating one guy getting a majority of the carries, or with these two easier games to lead off, are you expecting running back by committee?
I'm expecting one guy to get a lot of the carries, because if you look at the way they used Ronnie Rivers, for instance, last year, Ryan Grubb did, you know, he was a guy that got the massive majority of the carries. He was going to get, if I remember right, I think he got at least 100 attempts, you know, running the ball last year. And if you look, or at least halfway through the season, and if you look at the next most carries for a running back, I think it was like Mims with 28 or 30, something like that. So it was like 3-1. It was at least 3-1, if not more. So I think it's one of those things where they might, use one of those other guys as a changeup here and there. Or like I said, with a, like a Talapapa, he might be a third down guy or a red zone short yardage guy. But generally speaking, I think that they've shown a tendency, at least if you base it on last year's performance, they like to lean on one guy.
And a lot of people will think that, I mean, based upon what we saw in spring, it would be Dumas would be that guy. But the other guys were just hurt so much, we really didn't see much of them.
That's right. So it's again, it's to be determined. And obviously, they're not going to be exactly like they were in 2020 or 2021, you know, because it's just things evolve. They always evolve in terms of offense. They're always trying to find that little wrinkle that will give them a chance to do more and to be a little bit more creative and to kind of keep the defenses a little bit more honest, and, you know, in terms of, you know, because they're going to be new to the Pac-12. So they're not, you know, they're going to have to go off film of what they've seen from the other defenses. And obviously those other teams are going to have to scout them and try to, you know, figure out their tendencies as well. So they're always going to try to find those wrinkles. But when it comes down to it, I think that they're going to, you know, I think they're just going to try to rely on one guy. And I think that's going to be, you know, I think that's generally speaking how they want to operate, but you know, you just never know. And they, like you said, I mean, they've got enough guys where they could probably run a couple in, you know, here and there. But again, you know, when you look at the most successful Washington attacks, and again, we're talking about different staffs and whatnot, but you go back to Bishop Sankey, you go back to, you know, Miles Gaskin, you go back to Savon Ahmed, those were the guys, you know, 1,000-yard rushers. Those are the guys that have always been the real hallmarks of some of the most successful Washington attacks.
Scott, who do you think that number one guy is going to be at running back?
I think it'll be either Dumas or Talapapa. Those are the guys. I think Talapapa fits a really interesting role in the Washington offense because he doesn't really fit what Lee Marks and Kalen DeBoer and Ryan Grubb have wanted at the tailback position, but he's a big bruising guy. He can run between the tackles. He's going to be a great red zone guy. I think he will probably lead the team in rushing touchdowns this year. I could see him getting 10 to 15 rushing touchdowns this year. But who gets the most carries in between the 20s and things like that? I think it's really going to be split between Dumas and Nixon. I think they really like what Nixon brings to the table because of his versatility and all the different things he can do. I think you're going to see Giles Jackson get a lot more carries than maybe we thought. There was some times during spring ball that he took some carries out of the backfield. So you're going to see a lot of different guys get carries. Chris, I would agree with you that their preference is to find somebody who can carry a vast majority of the role. But I just don't think they really feel comfortable yet with the guys they have in the backfield to say this is our guy for our bell cow and the guy who's going to carry the load for us.
Neither one of you mentioned Richard Dumas or Cam Davis.
Richard Newton. Yeah. And the thing is, until we see how they come back, I mean, we didn't even see what they could do in the offense yet. So do I think that they could be those guys? Sure. But, you know, until they get healthy and things like that, I it's hard to imagine them being big time players in the room right now.
And I agree 100% with Scott, because at this point I'm not really sold on just listening to what, you know, Ryan Grubb or Lee Marks are going to say about the running back position. I would much rather look at what they're doing. And obviously what they've done is they've brought in three transfer running backs. That will tell you all you need to know about how unsure they are about the position in terms of what the current guys, or at least the running backs that were on last year's team, can provide them, whether it's because of injury, whether it's because they're bad fits in the offense, who knows. But all you can go by right now is you look at the three guys that are transferring in, and I agree with Scott. I think those are the guys that they're going to try to lean on a little bit, because clearly they're not either enamored or they're concerned that the current guys that are on the team can give them what they need.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
We haven't had a really had a chance to talk about the return of Jackson Kirkland. He got his exemption or whatever you want to call it. But even if he had gotten that earlier, it really wouldn't have mattered because he wouldn't have been able to participate in spring ball as he was in a boot, which is the reason that he applied for the waiver to get back in because of the injury. But how big is that, Scott, getting Jackson Kirkland back?
Oh, I think it's absolutely huge. I think with his experience and his ability to play guard or tackle and do different things, Chris and I wrote about this in our reviews, and I think we even talked about it on a podcast, that the offensive line lineup, the way it lined up at the end of spring, could look completely different when we get to fall camp, because Jackson Kirkland is probably your best and most experienced offensive lineman, and you know, if you have two left-handed quarterbacks, could he end up at right tackle replacing Mateo Mele, who started all of spring at right tackle? And could he replace him, send Mateo Mele as the first guy off the bench, keep Troy Fa'utanu at left tackle? Or could he move inside and play some guard? And where things are still kind of up in the air with Henry Bainavalu, who was limited very much during the spring. Victor Kern played right guard for all of spring ball. And I think that we could see a completely different offensive line. Getting him back is huge. Leadership, experience, talent, he's got it all. And I think that's a huge boost to Washington's offensive line.
Chris, are you still convinced that the center job is, why am I spacing on his name?
Corey Luciano?
Yeah. Are you still convinced that Corey Luciano is going to be the starting center?
Yes.
I just get the feeling you're going
to move. No question in my mind.
There was no one else that really took number one reps during spring. So yeah. Unless they now, granted, what Scott just said in terms of there being a pretty big overhaul along the offensive line this fall, I completely agree 100%. But I would put the caveat is that I think center might be the one place where it's not. I think they're pretty settled right now with Luciano and Garen Hatchett backing him up. Now, you know, depending on how physically a guy like Miles Morrell comes back, because he's been banged up, that could play a factor. Mateo Mele, who Scott mentioned, he's been, you know, getting reps a little bit here and there. Could, you know, having Jackson Kirkland move to right tackle, could that alter where Mateo Mele finds his future? Could he end up competing for the center job? Possibly. But I still think, you know, if you ask me today, gun to my head, who's the starting center for the Kent State game on September 3rd, it's Corey Luciano.
Yeah, we'll see how that plays out. Like I said, I just got this gut feeling, and I could be totally wrong. I just got this gut feeling that, you know, we could see Mateo Mele move over there if he's not, you know, going to be starter at one of the tackle positions or even at one of the guard positions. But we'll see. Just kind of a gut feeling.
Well and remember, Kim, I know you're probably basing a little bit of that because he's got some center experience in the past, but he literally started one game, and that was at Arizona, and that was 3 years ago.
Right.
So we're not talking about a guy that is a ready-made center, that is a guy that they could plug and play, no problem, could be the next guy up. He might end up having to be that guy, but I don't think that's necessarily what Scott Huff has in mind. Now, again, you're right, things could change, and I agree with Scott's initial premise that there could be some definite change-ups, and depending on whether they're using a right-handed quarterback or a left-handed quarterback, that all certainly factors into the equation. But I do feel like they want to be as solidified at center as they can possibly be, because that's the quarterback of the offensive line. And in this case, if you just went by what they did in spring, Corey Luciano is that guy, and there's really no debate.
Yeah, what's really weird, Scott, is we've been doing this such a long time, and I can't remember coming out of spring ball with more unanswered questions than we have this year. Quarterback, I think we know what's going on. Running back, offensive line, there's just so many question marks that, you know, are going to be really need to be answered. And it's going to be interesting come fall ball. Are they going to limit what we see like they did in spring ball?
Oh, I have a feeling, yes, they are going to limit. I think spring ball is going to be a lot like what we saw in fall camp is going to be a lot like what we saw in spring ball. I think they're going to limit what we see. And because they want to have that element of surprise, if they're going to open things up, it'll be next spring. After teams have already seen them and they feel a little bit more comfortable in their own skin and everything like that. But I just think that's probably what we're going to get the rest of the way when it comes to camps. And Kim, you know, what's ironic is I think that the position that had a lot of question marks last year heading into fall camp is the one that's probably the most solid, and that's the wide receiver group. Yeah. You know, you've got Jalen McMillan, Romo Dunze, you've got Jalen Polk, you've got a lot of guys with experience, you've got some younger guys who are going to come up and make some plays and do some things as well. Giles Jackson, I think, has really kind of come into form, and they're going to use him in a lot of different ways, as I mentioned during the running backs, conversation. So, yeah, I think the wide receiver group could be the group that could be kind of the breakout group. Part of it's because they played in a pedestrian offense under John Donovan the last couple of years. They've been handcuffed, and now things are going to be more wide open. And we saw it in spring ball, how they went down the field. They pushed the ball down the field. They got the wide receivers in different positions to make plays, and they made them. So Jalen McMillan, Romo Dunze, those are two exciting guys, and I think they could both have huge seasons. Jalen Polk is another one who I think could have a really big season this year.
And Chris, when we take a look at, you know, it looks like Coach DeBoer likes to kind of play things close to the vest as he did in spring ball, not letting us see a lot. And we're anticipating kind of the same thing as fall ball. You anticipate him doing the same thing maybe in those first two games of the season and going into Michigan State and not opening up the playbook and kind of keeping stuff close to the vest?
No. I think we... No, I think we saw in the Montana game last year that you can't really do that. I think that's kind of a non-starter. You play to win the game. It doesn't matter what you do. And the bottom line is they're going to keep scouting anyways. And then once the game's played, I think the actual scouting reports and all that stuff, I mean, that might be good for one or two series. But after that, it's just guys playing football. I don't expect that that's going to be an issue at all. Especially when they want to get off on the right foot. I mean, they want to come out and they want to show just how different they were from Jimmy Lake and John Donovan. You know, they want to show that this offense is dynamic and is going to put yards on the field and put points on the board. And this defense is not going to have any sort of letdown in the back end, you know, despite, you know, losing a couple really talented cornerbacks. And, so they've got all sorts of motivation and incentive to come out firing in those first two games instead of trying to play coy. Because like I said, you know, that Washington loses to Montana and then all of a sudden they got to go to Michigan. Well, was the plan for Jimmy Lake to hide all of his, you know, firepower for the Michigan game? Because if that was the case, that certainly didn't work out at all. In fact, it backfired.
Everything backfired under Jimmy Lake. But anyways.
Well, yeah, but I mean, yeah, but that's the point. The point is you can't afford to have a plan like that. Because the other team is coming to win. Guarantee you Kent State's not coming to just be a patsy. They're gonna come to win the game like Montana came to Seattle to win the game. So you've got to treat them with a lot of respect, and the way that you treat them with a lot of respect is that you play them straight up and then you punk them. You beat the crap out of them. That's what you got to do.
A lot of stuff going on in recruiting. We'll get to that shortly, but just want to also take a few minutes and talk about a little bit about basketball. Talk to, you know, some of my sources over the last few days and expecting the new transfer commit, Keon Brooks, expecting him in town today. And then the rest of the class over the weekend with Keon Minifield, Tyler Linhart, and Corin Johnson, as well as Braxton Mia. But, haven't had a chance to talk to you guys about Keon Brooks. And it's a huge get, you know, and that's a Will Conroy deal. It sounds like 100% when I talked to Keon, he said he didn't really deal much with Coach Hopkins, that Coach Hopkins just kind of took over his parents. And 100% on Will Conroy getting him here. So big get, and when you take a look, they lost Emmett Matthews and basically replacing him with Keon Brooks, Chris. I mean, I've heard the word freak, and he was just kind of handcuffed at Kentucky, where they just wanted him to be down low and they wanted him to be the dunking guy. And they really did not want him taking threes. And when I talked to him about shooting threes, he got a little irritated because, you know, I think that's one of the reasons he left Kentucky, was because he really wasn't able to show what he could do.
Well, yeah. And I mean, when listening to him talk about what his plans are and what Washington coaches have planned for him, I actually went back to look at his tape from La Lumiere when he played with Isaiah Stewart, because that seemed to be more indicative of the kind of offensive game that we might try to expect from him when he shows up. Because like you said, I mean, he was playing a role at Kentucky, just like other guys were playing a role. but here he's going to play more of the Terrell Brown role in terms of, you know, just kind of trying to really ignite the offense and be the guy that puts points on the board, no matter if it's inside the 3-point line or outside the 3-point line. And the irony is that, you know, Terrell Brown is, you know, 6'6", and Keon Brooks is 6'7" at least. And
6'9".
Well, that's what we've been told, but everyone lists him at 6'7", so I'm going to list him at 6'7". But the bottom line is they both have very similar games offensively. They want to do their damage inside the 3-point line. They will step out if they need to, and they will shoot the three. They're not going to ignore it. They're not going to shy away from it, but they feel a lot more comfortable inside the line having that mid-range game. You know, we didn't see as much posting up from Terrell, but he would at times. But he was not afraid at all inside the paint. Obviously, the same as for Brooks. And they have a lot of similarities in their game. And Brooks is even a little better free throw shooter, which is going to be important because he's going to get fouled quite a bit, or you'd expect him to get fouled quite a bit.
One interesting note, too, is, you know, a couple of guys that helped with him. Number one, Quade Green was a tremendous help from my understanding and talking to him and, you know, explaining what the coaches, you know, what they told him they would do is what they did. And what's really interesting about that is when Keon Brooks took his visit to Kentucky, his host was Quade Green. So that's kind of interesting. And then also Isaiah Stewart was also a big help in, you know, explaining how things worked here. And, you know, they told Isaiah how they were going to use him, and that's how they used him. So, you know, big kudos to those guys as well in being quite a bit of help on that. So just looking at to what they needed, what Washington really needed with what they lost from the roster last year, I think it's huge getting him in. He has 2 years of eligibility left. I think his goal is to be a one-and-done guy. We'll see if that happens. And, you know, that's one of the things, Chris, you know, people are talking about, is this a sustainable, you know, roster development plan and bringing in transfers every year? And I think that you need to look a little bit deeper than just what's gone on the last couple of years, because last year they needed to overhaul the roster. They just needed to flush that entire team, which is pretty much what they did. And they brought in a couple of guys that they knew only had 1 year of eligibility left. And then again, this year, bringing in more transfers, but all the guys that they brought in have more than 1 year of eligibility. So when, you know, you talk about knowing the zone and it taking a while, they're building this to be a little bit more sustainable, and guys have more than 1 year of eligibility left. And you hope that the guys further down the roster develop. And if not, you can kind of plug in. If Keon Brooks winds up leaving, you can go out and look for another one of those guys, but you're hoping that those guys further down the roster who have multiple years of eligibility left, you're hoping that they do develop.
Well, right. And I think that to me, when I look at what Mike Hopkins' plan for the portal is, I see him, you know, trying to have that balance of a couple one and done super big impact guys like he did last year with Dejon Davis and Terrell Brown. This year, even though Keon Brooks has 2 years left, I think you have to treat him as a one and done guy, as you mentioned, for all the obvious reasons. But then you bring in a Kepnang, Braxton Mia, Noah Williams, guys that have multiple years left. You know, those are guys that you can project for the future, just like last year when they brought in a PJ Fuller. They, you know, before that, they brought in Cole Bajima. You know, you've got to have those guys that can be depth pieces, that can have multiple years of the program, because you're trying to create defensively that thing that will separate you from the rest of the conference, for instance, when you use a Syracuse-type zone, something that can be a difference maker.
But when you talk about one-and-dones, Chris, when you take a look at Washington's one-and-dones in the past, they've been high school players. You know, and I'm thinking if you're going to get a one-and-done guy, I'd rather have a Keon Brooks who's been playing for a couple of years, and I think that's tends to be more of what you'll see is those type of guys where I think next year, you know, if we're looking at the transfer portal, it may be one guy they bring in unless somebody else leaves. But I really like what they've done. And, you know, just talking to some of the guys, a guy that they really seem excited about too is Frank Kepnang. When was the last time they had a guy that big?
Well, I mean, I don't know. I mean, they've had guys in the past that have been similar size. I mean, Brian Penn Johnson, you know, was probably similar size. But now they brought in two guys in the same class with him and Mia are definitely similar guys. What I would say about Brooks, though, how often do you find a guy who starts 33 games for Kentucky that all of a sudden becomes available in the transfer portal? And yeah, you've got multiple legitimate ties to that guy. I mean, that's a situation where you have to go for it, whether he's a one-year guy or a three-year guy, right? I mean, those types of opportunities just don't happen very often. So you've really got to take advantage of them when they do occur.
Yeah, just on another note, real quick, too, you know, just we get so much information, sometimes we fail to pass it on. But Corin Johnson, you know, there was some question marks with him. He had some work to get done in the classroom, and he got it done. So he's been admitted to UW and expecting him to show up this week, just to, you know, quick jaunt down the road. And then July basketball recruiting will really pick up with, you know, all the AAU stuff going on at the end of June and July, especially down in Vegas, the peach jam and all that kind of stuff. So it'll be interesting to follow that as well, but we want to take a quick break. And when we come back, Scott, you better be ready to go, because there's a lot of recruiting stuff coming up.
Bring it on.
We're going to be covering. So just a quick word from our sponsors and we'll be back. It's the guys from dogman.com on Dogman Radio.
Knowing how to speak and understand a new language can be an invaluable tool when traveling, meeting new friends, or just even to master a new skill. But it's not always simple when you're bogged down by textbooks and structure classes. That's why so many people trust Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. It truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, like Spanish, French, Italian, Chinese, and more. You won't just be studying English translations. The Rosetta Stone intuitive process helps you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/RS10. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/RS10 today.
Welcome back. It's the guys from dogman.com. I'm Ken Grinnells along with Chris Vetter, Scott Eklund. Recruiting is about to heat up with camps, more camps, and then some more camps. But actually, the coaching staff's out of town right now, aren't they, at some of the satellite camps, Scott?
Yeah, they're currently in Sacramento right now at the Sac State camp, and they were down in Redlands at the University of Redlands on Monday, I believe. So, yeah, they're all out on the road right now, but they'll be back in time for the weekend when they're going to be hosting a bunch of recruits, probably I would say somewhere in the realm of 200 to 250 recruits. They've got three camps going on Saturday: the Dirt Dog camp, which is in the morning, they've got the Specialist camp, which is right around noon, and then they've got the Top Dog camp, what we used to call the Rising Stars camp, but it's a Top Dog camp, and that's starts at about 5:30 and goes all the way until about 8. So yeah, that's kind of where things are going. And then on Sunday, they have a 7-on-7 tournament that they'll host. I think it's 25 to 30 schools that'll be doing, you know, bringing their skill guys. I put that in quotes because linemen are obviously skill guys too, but they'll have those guys on campus. You know, some of the past winners have been Skyline, has been there several times, Eastside Catholic, Kennedy Catholic. Those have all been winners of the 7-on-7 tournament that they have. There's schools from all over. They get California and Arizona schools. I know one Hawaii school that was planning to be up here, so I'm not 100% sure on that though. But just, you know, that's kind of the where things are going this weekend. They've got one official visitor in Jackson Bowers, a tight end out of Arizona. He's the only one scheduled right now. We're still trying to find out if there's going to be any more that'll be on campus. And then next week is when the official visit. I guess we got to call it a week. It's not just a weekend where they're going to have, by my last count, it was 19 guys that are expected in. I'm sorry, 19 guys that are expected in this coming weekend. This coming week. Two on Tuesday will be in, three on Thursday will be in, and then 14 over the weekend. So it's going to be a very busy next 10 to 15 days.
Any of those guys really we need to keep an eye on?
Well, one of them's already committed. That's Tyville Rogers. He's the only commit that's expected to come in for his official visit during this time. Anthony James is a guy that everybody wants to know about. Top guy on Washington's board. He's 6'5", 245-pound edge defensive end prospect out of Texas. Was committed to Texas A&M. Visited Washington and is scheduled to visit Washington. Took a visit to, I think, you know what, I'm going to pull it up right now. He took a visit to Utah last weekend. Yeah, he did take a visit to Utah about 2 weeks ago and loved his visit there. Washington is the only other official visit he has scheduled, and we'll see. I mean, I think Washington's in there swinging away and doing what they can, but going to be tough to pull a four-star kid out of Texas who everybody seems to want. So that's one name. Malachi Crawford, a defensive back out of Oxnard, almost 6'4", 100 pounds, got that length that you really like out there. Elisha Jacket, an offensive lineman from Orange, California. That's down in Orange County. Some other guys, Landon Hatchett's going to be in town. That everybody should know that name. He's the younger brother of Garen. Elinius Davis, a defensive lineman, defensive tackle prospect from Minnesota. When was the, I think we looked it up. Well, I can't remember the last time Washington had a kid from Minnesota. Jordan Whitney, he's a linebacker out of Oxnard in California. He's same high school as Malachi Crawford. Those guys could both be in. And then you got Luke Baklenko, who's a offensive lineman, 6'6", 300 pounds from Oaks Christian, who, you know, has really risen up a lot of recruiting boards. His mom is the former beach volleyball head coach at the University of Washington. She's now down in California coaching down there. And so he grew up here. I think he spent the first 10 years of his life in the state of Washington. So a guy to keep an eye on. And then during the week, you got Vincent Holmes, top safety prospect that the Huskies have on their board. Top quarterback is Lincoln Kindholtz. One of their top quarterbacks is Lincoln Kindholtz out of South Dakota. He's in on Thursday with Vincent Holmes. And Micah Banuelos is another one. That's a big time kid, local out of Kennedy Catholic, 6'3", 285. Washington has a really good shot at reeling in all three of those guys.
Give us a rundown on what's going on with the quarterback. You know, one of the guys that Washington had been high on and had offered seemed to commit to Oregon State earlier this week.
Yeah, well, he didn't seem to commit. He actually did commit. So
yeah, he did.
Aiden Childs, he's a quarterback out of Downey High School in California. And basically, Washington had three guys on their list that they had left. I'm sure there were other guys that they really liked, but they weren't really getting a lot of interest from them. Avery Johnson is probably, I don't want to say he's for sure the top guy on their list, but boy, it's hard to say that he isn't the top guy on their list. He can do it all. He can run. He can throw. He led his team to the state title game. They did not win it, but he took his team to the state title game, was the leading rusher on the team with like 1,100 yards rushing, can do it all. 6'2", 185, 190 pounds. Really loved his visit to the University of Washington. Took a visit to Kansas State. So he's out of Kansas. Took a visit to Kansas State last weekend. And then he's visiting Oregon this weekend. You know, I know Husky fans hate hearing this, but Oregon is the elephant in the room right now when it comes to recruiting because of what they can offer and the way they are able to really recruit really well. And so, I think this is going to be a Washington Oregon battle, but we'll have to see. Kansas State is there and they're the hometown school, but their next guy is Lincoln Kineholtz. And I think he's kind of, you know, if Avery Johnson is 1A, then Kineholtz is 1B because he's right there too. He's a guy who can run around, do a lot of different things with his legs, likes to throw it a little bit more than, and maybe is a little bit more developed as a passer than Avery Johnson, but not the athlete that Avery Johnson is. Still a pretty good athlete though. 6'3", 185 pounds. He's out of Pierre, South Dakota. He's already visited three schools. Wisconsin, he's already visited, was back on June 3rd. Wyoming on June 10th. He will be at North Dakota State on the 19th. And then on the 23rd, he'll come up and visit the University of Washington and be there through Saturday. So Washington gets the last shot at him. Ryan Grubb, during spring football, took a day, their one day off of spring ball, and took that day to fly out to North Dakota and offered him in person. So that should tell you how much they think of that kid.
Ending this a little bit quick. Again, we're having a little bit of technical difficulties. We'll make sure and do another podcast early in the week after this weekend and go over kind of what we saw over the weekend and then, again, preview the big recruiting week next week. But you know, when it comes to football, basketball, and recruiting, Chris, any final thoughts?
No, just that obviously when it comes to camp season, that's obviously where the rubber really meets the road. And I think especially for this particular coaching staff, trying to make a huge first impression, you know, try to make a really good first impression, especially with a lot of the local recruits, if they can. We know about the Loyal to the Soil campaign. You know, this is kind of one of the next steps in that, is to really show a lot of the local kids and their coaches some love by getting their guys coached up and showing them some attention, you know, getting them on campus, showing them the facilities, kind of running them through the program while they're getting recruited. That's all a big, big part of it. And so excited to kind of see what these guys have in offer. You know, we'll get out there this weekend and we'll see some of the things that they're doing. But obviously, as Scott alluded to, with all the numbers coming through at the end of the month, could be arguably one of the biggest, if not the biggest, recruiting weeks on offer in a long, long time. So I'm kind of excited to see how that thing unfolds.
Hey, Scott, real quick, basketball players in town this weekend, football players as well?
Jackson Bowers will be in this weekend, and I don't know about any. Oh, I'm sorry. You're talking about the 2022 guys. Yeah. Yes. All of them are expected to arrive in Seattle tomorrow, and then they'll move into their dorms on Saturday. So,
okay. Just Final thoughts real quick, Scott.
Just going to be crazy over the next 10 to 15 days. Just stay tuned here because I'll have it all for you. So will Chris.
Basketball guys in this weekend too, and they have informal runs all the time, and I'm going to try to find out at some point next week where they're at and see if I get a glimpse of the new guys, the old guys, and anybody else that's out there. So hey, for all of us at dogman.com, if you're looking for those regular updates as well as breaking news alerts, just shoot us a note, huskystadium@gmail.com. we'll hook you up. For all of us at dogman.com, I'm Kim Grenolds along with Chris Fetters and Scott Eklund. Go Dogs.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.